This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. Today on the radio show... Let's see. Oh, we have an interesting radio show today. We got Will Hudgens going to join us, former quarterback at the University of Memphis, now at Lausanne. Here's to talk about Mario Reed at a golf tournament for the Mario Reed Foundation, among other things. It was funny. I was looking at Will Hudgens' history a little bit. Is he your contemporary? Did he play at Ridgeway?
Will was a senior when I was a freshman, and MUS and Ridgeway obviously being close, like, in football, that was always our end of training camp scrimmage. We'd play them, and then we play them in baseball every year. Will is what I would refer to as when we decided that being a great athlete only meant how fast you run and how high can you jump. Will got screwed. He was a phenomenal athlete.
Well, what's amazing, he lettered in, not surprising football, not surprising basketball. Also lettered in Ridgeway at swimming. And then for the University of Memphis, he not only played quarterback, he started various times throughout his 6-year career, by the way.
Yep.
He was beset by injuries.
A lot of injuries.
He was a deep snapper. He was a punter. He was a fullback among his other roles. And then, of course, has gone on to coach here. He coached at Houston. He was the AD at St. Benedict. Now is at Lausanne. I ran into him the other day because I was talking to the middle school kids at Lausanne, and he asked to come on to talk about this. But we'll talk to Will about all manner of things. We'll do that in the next segment. Chris Harrington, straight up 10 o'clock. Chris has his annual examination of the Grizzlies roster, who's likely to return. Basically, he sets up an exercise whereby sort of if you were having an expansion draft from the least valuable to the most valuable. So it doesn't just focus on ability. It also focuses on value,
contract situation,
health, everything. So he does that in two parts. The first part published today over at the Daily Memphian. You can read it there. And then it is Thursday. Now, last week we didn't have Writer Than Right trivia because we didn't have Wright. That makes it tough. And we didn't have Cerrito either.
Correct.
And this week, happily, we have Wright back. We do not have Cerrito, however. And so this is going to be an unofficial. I got up a little earlier this morning and came up with the questions. So Jeffrey tends his winning percentage, which is like 986 when Kevin is asking the questions, is more like 89% when I'm asking the questions.
I think so? I'm like your boy Hollybrook. Kevin is regular season goaltending.
Right. Connor Hellebuck.
Hellebuck,
yeah. So, but anyway, so there you go. We're going to play Right in the Right trivia. And I'll be honest, I didn't quite, what is the prize?
So today we've got Killswitch Engage, rock band out of Massachusetts, is going to be at Minglewood Hall. So we have two tickets to not only see Killswitch Engage, but also you will get meet and greet passes.
Meet and greet with Killswitch Engage.
Get to meet the band.
When is that?
That'll be, I believe, it's May 11th, so I believe that's Saturday, correct, if I'm doing my math right?
It's coming up. Killswitch Engage.
Or is that Sunday? Maybe it's Sunday.
Rock band.
Correct.
Massachusetts. And you get to hang out with Killswitch Engage. So there you go. Okay, that is the lineup for today. Jeffrey, we do not have a Pope yet.
We do not. So you and I nailed that prediction.
Well, no, we didn't yet.
Because we definitively said no. Sometimes you got to hit a layup.
We did get some things wrong. They vote four times a day, not two times a day.
Okay.
So today they've already voted, I think, but no white smoke. They have convened. The doors, you know, have been closed, sealed shut. And as Jimmy Fallon said, they've taken on and debated that massive, important question. Can 100 Cardinals beat a gorilla? I thought it was a good line. Merging two issues in the day. Our view was that we will have a pope by the time, not today, but by the time we show up tomorrow morning for this radio show.
That's huge for us.
There will be a pope. Are you sticking by that now that you know that they vote four times a day and not two times a day?
Yeah, I'm still sticking by it.
Okay. I think I'm sound. I think it's sound too, because I want to give the impression that they deliberated.
Correct.
You know, they're probably just in there.
We took this seriously.
Playing bingo, right?
But we're not giving up a weekend.
But, right, they're not going to give up a weekend. Today is also Tom Lee Day, by the way. It was 100 years ago today. And if you have missed the remarkable series by Bill Drees on Tom Lee, who saved 32 people 100 years ago today from the Mississippi. Bill Drees has done a deep dive on this fascinating series, and we're actually going to be joined by Bill tomorrow to talk about that. So there you go. We also had the news yesterday in the Tyre Nichols state trial where three police officers were found not guilty. And obviously there's a lot of pained reaction to that. It's really hard to see a man unarmed beaten to death and not have some sort of justice. Now you can listen. I saw people say they say that this is the saddest day for their city. I mean, the sad day was, of course, when they pummeled Tyre Nichols to death. That was an incredibly sad day. Here, it was a jury from the Chattanooga area, basically. That came in, and if you followed it at all, there is one officer who is still facing state charges, who was evidently the most violent of them, and so all the officers were pointing their fingers at him, right? Like sort of how it goes, and I guess for those. It's some small consolation that all three were convicted of federal charges, not particularly serious federal charges, but they all three were convicted of federal charges. But it was obviously a wrenching day. The guy was kicked and beaten to death. He was unarmed. Several of the officers took photos of him and sent those photos, sort of used him as a prop. It's sickening what happened, obviously. And I think I understand the anguish of those, who reacted as they did, understandably, when the verdict came down. There is a rally today at 4 p.m. at the Civil Rights Museum. For those who are interested in that. That was obviously a wrenching day, certainly for his family, but also for the city. But that's the lineup today, Jeffrey. Do you feel better about the Grizzlies after watching what Oklahoma's? We'll start with that one.
All right.
Watching what Oklahoma City did to Denver. 149. It will all look very familiar.
Yeah.
149.
Well, I will admit I was rooting, but please get to 52. Please get to 52. I was openly rooting for that.
I was too. 149 to 106. It was startlingly familiar. It was a 30-9 run. I think the score was 3-2, and then it became a 30-9 run. It became 30-11. It then became 45-21 at the end of the first quarter. At the end of the first half, this was all we've seen. It was 87-56. turnovers were sort of the story. We've seen all of this. 21 turnovers by Denver, leading to Oklahoma City flying down the court. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was better. Was good yesterday. In fact, he has averaged in the two games. Obviously, it's 1-1, 1-1. He's averaged 33.5 points. He shot 59% over those two games. He's averaging 7 rebounds, 8 assists. He has 3 turnovers total in the two games. And you had, 8 different Oklahoma City players in double figures, and nobody who played more than 30 minutes.
Yep.
Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think there was another underrated stat that Ian Eagle read out. Like, it was, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 minutes left in the second quarter, and he's like, the Thunder have only missed 6 shots total. 0 from the free throw line, 6 from the floor. Like, it was just the absolute beatdown. And, you know, Denver, it felt like if I would have seen this game 1, this would have made more sense to me. But it was the fact that, like, Denver had, because to me, like, this was Denver showing they're on fumes. They had nothing.
Right, and, this is what you expected in game 1, which is when it happened against the Grizzlies. Was correct. Another game 1. And then you what honestly expected was a blowout in game 1 and a tougher test, but a loss by Denver in game 2.
Yeah.
So Denver's still in better position, certainly,
than I
expected them to be. But it does certainly feel like Oklahoma City is the better team.
Certainly feels like Oklahoma City is the better team. And you realized last night what the only formula that Denver has, realistically, is Jokic has to be all world. And then you have to have Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray be really good. And they didn't get any of those three last night.
And you got to limit your turnovers against that team. So there you go. The shocker, nothing shocking about that. And I do think, by the way, it makes the Grizzlies look better by implication. Don't you? Don't you think it looks? I mean,
let's see how the rest of the series goes.
If it's a bunch of blowouts after this, you're like, okay, that's what we ran into. First one was a fluke. That's what we ran into. The other one is just I'm gobsmacked that it happened again.
almost the same script.
That the Knicks were down 20 again. That they were down 12 heading into the fourth quarter. That somehow the Celtics at home can't close it out. That Tatum's bad down the stretch, and that Mikal Bridges makes a winning defensive play.
Now, they did only miss 30 threes this time.
Yeah, but the shooting percentage was the same.
They cut it down.
The shooting percentage was the same. Tell me this. You're a math guy. They were 15 of 60 last time, right?
Mm-hmm.
This time they were 10 of 40.
Yep.
25%. It's exactly the same.
So they're 25% three
So
points.
They did miss fewer threes, but the shooting, they still didn't shoot well. They only shot 36%, period, and they shot 25% from three. Wasn't it just yesterday that John Martin was explaining to me that Jason Tatum is a superstar?
Mm-hmm.
Is Jason Tatum a superstar?
No.
He's just not. Honestly.
I guess, though, here's the one thing, though. Does superstar mean?
It also means larger than life.
Right.
And he's never, even at his best, correct. He's never been larger than life.
Correct.
Right. It means larger. Superstar is more, is almost, that was, I say that. I was going to say, a superstar
like,
has
Tim
to
Duncan
be.
Like Tim Duncan a superstar?
That's what I was going to say. I was about to say a superstar has to be even more than what they do on the court. But Kawhi Leonard was a superstar at a time, wasn't he, or not? Tim Duncan is a superstar. Tim Duncan is indisputably a superstar, and all he ever was what he was on the court.
Yeah, that's a great question.
When you are one of the 10 best players in the league, or 5 best players in the league, or Tim Duncan was 3 best players in the league, well, 10 best players of all time, you are a superstar.
Maybe this is the demarcation, because I don't think Kawhi's period to the claim was very quick, maybe like 18.
So maybe he wasn't a superstar because it wasn't long enough?
No, what I think it is at some point you have to have a legitimate claim to I'm the best player on the planet. Tim Duncan for a long time had it.
Kawhi never?
No, I think he did Kawhi has this.
He was always playing when Kobe was playing and when.
Right, but he still.
LeBron was playing. Even when he was at his best, he wasn't the best player on the planet because LeBron was alive.
That's true, but he had. You could make the claim
Right.
And again,
he's playing the best, right? Right. Superstar. Interesting question. Because does it, I think we've established that it can't depend on off the court seismic.
It can't
stuff
just be marketability.
Because it can't even, that can't be a necessary part of it, because that would exclude Tim Duncan. And Tim Duncan was clearly a superstar. So it can't, but maybe it's part of it at the margin. I don't really know. I don't think Jason Tatum, like, and obviously he came up small last night with just 13 points. He was 5 of 20. He was 1 of 5 from 3. And then, so he had a bunch of, like, down the stretch, he missed that corner 3 that would have put him up by 9. I think there were less than 4 minutes to go when he missed that. He bricks a shot when they were up by, after the lead had been cut to 1. And then the last, he does get the dunk. Like, he gets the dunk, and you're like, well, do that, Jason Tatum. And then the last possession after the 3 throws, kind of dribbles around.
I don't
get stuck in the corner, and Mikal Bridges comes over and just demolishes that shot.
Well, that's the other thing. When him and Brown have the ball in their hands, I never feel comfortable. Like, when he was dribbling around, like, for instance, if you compare it to SGA, when SGA is going through the lane, I have all the confidence in the world. Like, that guy is going to, but it's almost like he lost the ball 2 or 3 times. Like, he has to, like, regather. I don't know. Like, he's the perfect person to debate.
Well, it's why, that, by the way, is why back when people wondered if the Celtics would ever win a title,
right,
it was why they wanted, like, who's running the show here?
Like, you know, the playoffs does always feel like, who's your guy?
Of course, then they did win a title. They
but
did.
Then it's like,
did
it almost work. Feels like they won their title just because they were one of the few teams that said, we don't care about any of the tax implications, whatever. We're just going to have the best roster.
Okay, here we have it. And now you're looking at the, my God, Madison Square Garden. The prices of those tickets.
Oh, my gosh.
For Game 3. Up 2-0 on Boston, goes to Madison Square Garden. What is your level of confidence that the Knicks are now going to win this thing?
Is it sad that I think now it's like a coin flip?
Like, no, I don't think that's about right.
I don't feel, I do not want to pound the table. Like,
they were up by 20
in both games.
In both games, which was reflective of what happened in the regular season.
Correct.
And should be reflective, actually, of the gap in talent between these two teams.
Correct.
Well, let's just say, who would you pick to win the series now?
Straight up.
It's weird. I still want to say Boston, but I can't tell if I'm being stubborn. Seems like a lot. Seems like a lot to ask.
But, like,
in New York.
The other thing is, what we've seen this year is home court means nothing.
Doesn't seem to matter.
And so, are you really telling me I can't foresee where Boston goes into the Garden?
No, I can see him winning both of the Garden. 100%.
Like, that's the real question for me. It's like, what does Game 3 look like?
It was riveting once again. Oklahoma City was not, but I guess it was if you were rooting for the 52-point win. That kept you engaged. But that one was riveting once again. You almost couldn't believe you were seeing what you were seeing. And then tonight we got the Warriors versus the team. We got the news, the Warriors versus the team, and we got the news that Steph is out for at least a week, as we discussed yesterday. There's 1 day between games 1 through 4. It feels like he will miss all of those.
Yeah.
And will he be back?
I saw some Twitter doctors that were even saying, like, not till game 6.
Yeah. Will he be back for game 5? And what state will he be in when he returns? I think this is what it feels like. T-Wolves are going to win that series. Warriors are going to have the excuse, legitimately, not just excuse.
No, I agree. The
any more than it was excuse when the Grizzlies lose when Ja's out. It's not an excuse. It's a reason.
Yeah. It's content.
And Oklahoma City will take care of Denver. Oklahoma City will take care of the T-Wolves.
Yep.
Oklahoma City will play
Boston.
Who?
Boston.
Doesn't look like Cleveland anymore.
Boston.
We'll play Boston.
Boston.
So there you go. We do have other news that we have to get to. Again, we got Will Hudgens in the next segment, but there was college football news yesterday that I wanted to get to as well. And that is a couple of things. The in the weeds news is the House settlement.
Yeah,
I know. You know, I say that I'm kind of bored talking about PJ Hagerty now, which I am. House settlement is guaranteed to make people's eyes glaze over, right?
Yes,
House settlement. But they can't start paying players until the House settlement is approved. You can't start doing the revenue sharing.
Well, you can
promise them.
No, it seemed the standard, it seemed like yesterday, because I think there are legitimate people out there that think what they're about to offer up
is not going to be approved.
Is not going to be approved.
So what
so they're just going to start paying them and say, like, what is the NCAA going to do?
The judge said, the judge said that the settlement, which was proposed, under which they'd start all of this stuff, they'd start paying the players, et cetera, the roster limits that are a part of it, there are new roster limits that are a part of it, and they're players who will lose their spots on teams because of these roster limits that are part of the settlement. She said, no, this is supposed to be helping student athletes. I'm not going to approve a settlement that has roster limits that, you know, cost people their spot. You got to figure this out. And she's been saying this all along, honestly, and they've done nothing to figure it out. So the what's been proposed now is that athletes will be who would otherwise be cut from their teams will be grandfathered in. Current athletes, even uprising, even freshmen who are about to start, will be grandfathered in. But the thing is, it's that it's not automatically.
Right.
It's only at the discretion of the school.
It's optional.
If it's totally optional, and the person who has the option is the school deciding to do it or not.
How
do
does it change it?
So I don't really understand.
You went to law and how does this literally change it?
If you're an Auburn swimmer, for example,
right,
and like that, I heard an interview with an Auburn swimmer who was going to lose his place on the team, and if Auburn decides not to do it, he still lost his place on the team. Right. I don't get why. Maybe she'll approve it. Anyway, there's that. But then the bigger news was Ross Dellinger reported that Trump is going to put together a presidential commission. And the presidential commission will be headed by Nick Saban and by a guy named Cody Campbell to come up with a solution to the whole college sports mess. What is your level of confidence that they will come? What do you think of this? And what is your level of confidence that they will come up with a solution to the whole college sports mess?
I mean, it does feel like Trump trying to go for like a cheap pop, like, hey, this is like some type of win.
You know, I don't
think it's necessarily a bad, like, I don't.
No, as some of you know, some of you may have been able to guess, I'm not the biggest fan of Donald Trump. But. But I don't actually have much. In other words, I have some quibbles with this, but like, is it like I saw her Gabe call it grandstanding. Like, this is what Trump does. He's done a million executive orders on all kinds of things. Like, he just talked the other day about having tariffs on movies made outside of all kinds of things. Like, he's, you know, left and right, like, executive order. There's not been no legislation passed, but there's really to speak of, but there's executive order after executive order after executive order. And so does this feel like, and we know Donald Trump cares about sports, right?
Yeah.
And then he was just at the University of Alabama, where he was, it's funny. It said that it was pitched as he was giving the commencement address. I have a friend whose son is graduating from the University of Alabama, and I talked to him on the way back. He did not speak at any established commencement activities.
Yep.
Right? They have graduation for the School of Liberal Arts, yep, or the School of Engineering and whatever, yep, else. What they did is they created, and the truth of the matter is, there are some people, the father of my friend, for example, they probably wouldn't have gone. They wouldn't have wanted Trump to be their graduation speaker because they're probably on the other side of this. And so what they did is they created a special event for Trump to speak at.
Yeah.
Right. And then if you're a Trump person, you could get tickets and you could go to that event. And that's where he spoke. But anyway, he also met with Saban, and it would make sense to me that a guy who cares deeply about sports and people are imploring him to do something about the mess. I got no problems, actually. I think the issue is
level of confidence.
What are they going to come up with that is going to be legal? And this is something I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, very clearly, what college sports writ large has wanted is legislation that allows them to do things that they cannot do now because of antitrust reasons, right? They cannot right now put a cap on, they can't regulate player movement at all, basically. They can't regulate when players can move. They can't regulate how much they can make. They can't regulate, we've seen that, right? That's anytime the NCAA tries to regulate anything, it's struck down for antitrust reasons. And so what they've wanted is legislation that would create an antitrust exemption for college sports. That's the main thing they want. And it is true, I was a lawyer in a former life. But I don't know if they can do that by executive order.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
And I don't think they can, but I don't know. We could get my brother, the antitrust professor, on to talk about it. And if they can't, I don't know what Nick Saban, who was pretty, like, Nick Saban has always been he's always talked about this the way a football coach would.
Yeah.
I didn't like it when players get paid, or they should show up and play first and then, well, that's all great, Nick, but that's all illegal. Right.
That's
so I just don't have any confidence that they're going to be able to come up with a solution that is actually legal. I guess that's it. The other interesting thing is this other dude who's the other co-chair, Cody Campbell. He's a billionaire who was an oil and gas guy who started the Texas Tech NIL Collective. And it is kind of interesting because he has written about college sports before. Listen to this. These are his words, right?
Right.
Furthermore, to permanently sustain the economic model, we must reimagine the organization and governance of college sports altogether. The professional leagues have found great success in building the brands of all of its franchises, not just those in the big markets. This has expanded the league's economic pie, created greater parity, and has massively increased viewership. College sports do not currently have the right to take the same approach, as they do not have the protection under the Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It says the big and story programs will continue to retain advantage because their massive ticket sales, donor support, and ability to monetize licensing. But the smaller schools will basically be able to share in revenue sharing is what he's saying. Finally, there must be some geographic sense made of conference alignment. Because the conferences must compete with each other for media deals, they're incentivized to organize into leagues that span multiple time zones and cover the full width of the continent. This has resulted in the loss of traditional rivalries and has ballooned travel expenses and time away from the classroom, especially for the non-revenue sports. It also diminishes fan engagement and excludes those who cannot afford cross-country travel for weekend. All of this makes total sense to me. But it's like, it's Nirvana stuff.
Yeah. It does feel pie in the sky.
Like, is he really suggesting that the SEC is going to come up with something that is going to not...
Well, I mean, is he talking about that Super League proposal that we saw?
It's the kind of thing that a Memphis fan, who knows if he's talking about when they talk about all schools, if he's also including about Memphis. That guy's talking about language that a Memphis fan would understand.
Yes, totally agree. And root for.
Yeah, and root for. So, anyway, we shall see what comes of that. Do you have any reaction to that beyond?
To me, there is kind of this, I don't know if this is fair, but it also feels like, all right, the NCAA had largely had success because the courts had protected them. And so anytime they had issues and anyone's like, we'll see you in court, they were happy to say, cool, we'll see you in court. We win in court. Well, they started losing in court.
Right, and so now they're
and well now well no then remember then they spent all this money lobbying for right. for Congress, and it's like, well, now we can't get anything from Congress.
No, this is simple.
Now it's like going, well,
you can't get Congress to agree on anything,
right?
But
so
you can, an executive order, all you need is Trump to issue it.
Correct. And now it's like, well, let's go to Trump. But I'm with you. I don't.
But like so many of his executive orders, will that immediately be challenged in court and whatever else? We'll see. Okay. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We got Will Hudgens. We got Chris Harrington. We got Right and Then Right Trivia. It is a busy day on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Will Hudgens. Will Hudgens, former quarterback, of course, at the University of Memphis. He's coached and been an administrator throughout the Memphis area in the years since. He's at Lausanne now, and he joins me. I ran into Will at Lausanne because I was speaking to the middle schoolers. How are you, Will?
I'm doing great, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. So the reason that you wanted to do this, let's get this out of the way first because I'd love to talk about it, is the Mario Reed Foundation. How did you happen to get involved with the Mario Reed Foundation?
So, I mean, some people might know my uncle, Bill Crumby.
Yep.
He played for the University of Memphis, broke his neck October 7th, 1977. And so he basically was my second dad, along with all of my 15 cousins. And so we grew up with him as a main, figure in our life. And he passed away in 2000. And it was a very, obviously sad day for all of the whole family. And it was a crazy day. And one of the only things I kind of remember being at his funeral that day was Mario being there. And unbeknownst to me at the time, Mario and my uncle, befriended each other, obviously, very similar circumstances. And so my uncle was kind of a mentor to Mario. And it always just kind of stuck in my head, what a great man Mario was to show up that day. And so fast forward 20 plus years later, I run into an old teammate, Isaac Daniels, who is the executive director at Stax Music. And so I do the thing that you're supposed to do in 2020, 2024. You Facebook stalk, you Twitter stalk, you go see what your old teammate's up to. And I saw that he was involved in the Mario Reed Foundation. And I said, man, this is a, unbelievable kind of sign for me to get back into doing something that obviously is a passion in my life, was, helping my uncle who's a quadriplegic, helping people with paralysis. And so I reached out to Isaac to get Mario and I hooked up. We went out, had lunch, and kind of the rest is, the rest is history. It's just something that I want to do to help the paralysis community and help Mario so that he can do the things that he wants to do, which is, he wants to do so much. And I just felt like it was something I could do to honor my uncle's name and to also honor Mario, and because he's such a big name in our community. And such a great story, if you haven't heard it. It's just awesome.
For folks who don't know, Mario Reed was played for Millington, and he broke his neck during a game, and so was a contemporary sort of. I mean, obviously, he was injured much later than your uncle, but it's remarkable that they connected. Bill was kickoff return? I think it was a kickoff return, right? Isn't that what happened to your uncle?
Yes, that's exactly right. He was on a kickoff return. He was actually making a tackle, and a teammate came in, and just kind of that just weird football play, those things that kind of happen. And just kind of, I speak to so many people that were there that night and just talk about kind of how eerie it was. And same with the Mario situation. It's just kind of just when those things happen on the football field, it's just that eerie silence and just kind of, that shock factor, if you would. So,
remarkable. The other thing that unites them, though, is that when that happens, you just assume life is over. And for both of them, it wasn't, right? I mean, they still contributed. They still lived, vibrant lives. And Mario is still making a difference in the community today.
You hit the nail on the head. Mario reminds me so much of my uncle, of just, like you said, the vibrant life. And if when you speak to them, when you get to sit down with them, you would never think anything like this would ever happen to somebody like that. And they will never speak bad about any of it. And all they want to do is move forward and help others. They obviously were put in an unfortunate situation. Mario is too, but his will to live and his want to be able to help other people is remarkable. And it's just awesome to just sit there and talk to somebody like that, that's, been through that situation. It's kind of what helped me get through a lot of my injuries, right? People are like, how do you do it? Well, I'm sitting there looking at a man that helped raise me that was in a wheelchair for 20 plus years. who never complained, who never, you know, had the greatest outlook on life. And Mario is the exact same way. And wants, like I said, I just go back to, he wants to do so much to help people that, you know, it's weird to say less fortunate to him, but don't have the resources that he was able to have. The support from the Millington community that's always helped him and pushed him. So
what's the foundation aim to do, and what's the event that you have that you'd like to call people's attention to?
Yeah, so we're hosting a golf tournament on June 6th. It'll be at Forest Hill Golf Course in Drummond, Tennessee. And this is the first time we're hosting it. You know, and Mario's goal and mission is basically we want to advocate for people with paralysis. You know, we're fostering positive roles for the youth, trying to open doors in legislation to get bills passed. And so we're searching for sponsorships and fundings, grants. You know, his ultimate goal is he wants to build a facility in the Midtown area to help educate people in the poverty and to help mentor youth and those who suffer from paralysis at Regional 1, La Bonner. There's so many people that reach out to Mario for him to be able to come and speak to some of our youth that have this tragic incident that happened to them as well. So, like I said, his ultimate goal is he wants to build a facility in Midtown to help all the paralysis community.
So if folks want to either just sign up to play golf and contribute that way, or if they do want to be sponsors or help in any larger sense, should they Facebook stalk you like you once did your teammate, or how exactly how should they get in touch?
Facebook stock Mario Reed Foundation. So it is on the Mario Reed Foundation Facebook page.
Okay.
We are actively getting it set up on the Mario Reed Foundation website, which will soon be up and active as well. But right now, Mario Reed Foundation Facebook page. And then I'm going to be putting it all over X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, on my Twitter, which is Will_Hudgens_. And then hopefully I'll get you to retweet it. I think Jeffrey's already retweeted it, 92.9. So just trying to put it all out on any social media. But right now the best way to get there is the Mario Reed Foundation Facebook, or Will_Hudgens_ on X.
All right. It's funny. I was looking before we had you on today. I was looking back at your career. I didn't realize you lettered in swimming as well as basketball and football. Is this true?
It is true.
What was your event in swimming, and how good a swimmer were you, Will?
So I swam the freestyle because I had no clue what I was doing, honestly.
You weren't butterflying it around out there, no.
Definitely not. Uh-huh. Listen, if I swam more than two laps, I was doggy paddling. But we were at Ridgeway at the time. We had two brothers, Gil and Brooke Stovall. Gil went on to actually swim in the 2008 Olympics.
Swam at Auburn, I think, and swam in the Olympics. I wrote about it at one point.
That's correct, yeah. And he actually, if you go back and watch, I can't remember the exact event. I want to say it was the 100 fly. He was actually ahead of Michael Phelps at the turn. Of course, Michael obviously went on to get him. But so we had the two brothers that were unbelievable, and we had another young guy named Felipe Cortez who went on to swim collegiately. So we only had three swimmers, and you need four for a relay. So as cocky as I was in high school, I used to mess with them and say, "Hey, listen, I could, you know, I swim in the backyard of my pool. I could whoop y'all anytime, you know."
Right.
So they came to me and they're like, "Hey, we need a fourth." So I went out, and it was so much fun. You know, it's just such a different atmosphere, energy.
Did you practice, or did you just go swim in the events? Like, because swimmers, they're up for 4 hours in the morning swimming. You know, they're putting in laps and laps and laps. You didn't do that.
No, definitely not. 100% not. The joke was I used to go and I would tell them I'm going to go see how cold the water is. And if it's not too cold, I might warm up a little bit. But my thing, I didn't want to burn my energy, you know, because they're used to swimming so much because they literally put miles in the pool every day. They have to do it to get warmed up. Mine was, I felt like if the water was colder and I didn't touch it, it would be like kind of a shock factor, right? As soon as you hit the water, it's so cold.
This is science. This is science, Will. This is science,
I'm trying to swim as fast as I can to get back out, you know, to warm up.
And then, you know, during your, you mentioned your injuries, you You blew out your knee, I gather, dunking a basketball in high school. So your freshman year, you redshirted. And then two broken bones and a knee surgery once you were at Memphis as well?
Yes. There was a lot, so I try not to remember them too much. But it was tore the ACL spring of my senior year in high school, redshirted. I came back. I broke my ankle that devastating year. Byrne broke his leg, third play of the game, Ole Miss that year. Then I returned the following year and had like a non-displaced tibial plateau fracture set out that year. Came back, had the minor knee surgery, just kind of a touch-up deal a year later. I mean, it was just it was six rough years.
How do you look at it? Obviously, you came in extraordinarily highly touted, not just for your swimming. And the team had some decent years when you were there. But honestly, like, I think your last year was Tommy's last year. Which didn't go well. He was fired after that. So, but I'm sure you made lifelong experiences. And how do you view it all? Yeah.
Was there a press conference after he got fired?
Indeed there was, Will. Were you there? were you there?
I was in the back of the room.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I was in the back of the room.
Oh, God.
No, listen, I don't regret any of it. You know, being able to go to Memphis and have to go through the things I did, I was very fortunate because I had family around me, honestly. I had a lot of great friends and great family, obviously, to support me. So I don't know if I would have been able to overcome some of those circumstances, not being able to have family and friends close. I think you make decisions for certain reasons. You don't really figure it out till later in life. But I had a great time. I've got a lot of great stories, got a lot of great teammates that it's awesome to run into and see and just catch up and tell old stories. And, you know, a lot of people I don't think realize how many great coaches we had at Memphis at the time that have gone on to be head coaches at other schools and big schools, you know. So I have no regrets in any sense, but, you know, obviously wish the injuries hadn't happened, but they did for a reason, and so, you know, I just roll with the punches, kind of, as I said earlier, was raised with a guy that got put in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So, you know, having a little broken leg wasn't a big deal.
So now you're at Lausanne. How are things over at Lausanne?
Man, they're awesome. As you know, what a great school it is. Great place to be. You're around a lot of great people. The kids are unbelievable. You know, I think the thing that we do great here, the kind of the Lausanne way, but everybody is striving to get to be great and to move on to the next level at no matter what it is you want to do. You know, football wise, we've got a great group of kids. We got a great group of seniors coming up. We've got Joel Rogers, who's got multiple offers from UNLV, Archie State, Southern Miss, Martarius Boyd, UNLV, Central Arkansas, J.B. Hohen, Southern Miss, our quarterback, T.J., he's got Tusculum. We got a junior named Warren Spritt, who's pretty much got everybody in the country's offering him right now. So it's just awesome to be at a place that wants kids to do great. But the thing is, our kids want to be great, and they hold each other accountable, and so it's just a lot of fun to be around. And
is the environment crazy in the world of high school sports these days?
Yes. I mean, it's just a trickle down from college, right? I mean, obviously everybody knows that Tito Estable is trying to figure out what they want to do with the transfer rule. Yeah. And you know, who knows what that looks like, you know, it's just weird, you know. I guess.
Do you think you would have, in this environment, spent all your high school career at one place, or do you think in this a young Will Hudgens comes up, it would have played out differently?
You know, I don't know because you know, it's funny to say 20 years ago, but 20 years ago, I don't think anybody ever thought about it.
Right. Yeah. Your school. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. I mean, I was fortunate to go to Ridgeway, which was my neighborhood school. and had a great head coach in John Cooley, who was probably the greatest servant leader that anybody could ask for to show you the way of how to treat people and how to create relationships. But Coach LeCastro jokes all the time, I wish you would have come to Christian Brothers, you know, sort of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad I didn't have to think about some of those things. The world these kids live in these days with all the social media and all the added pressure and attention that's unneeded, it's just, if you're good enough and you have the athletic ability and the want to make it to the next level, you're going to do it. I don't think it matters, one bit other than that. So,
well, we appreciate it. Once again, it's the Mario Reed Foundation Golf Tournament in June, and you can go to the website if you're interested in either playing or sponsoring or contributing. Really appreciate you reaching out and having you on, Will. Thanks so much.
No, thank you, Jeff. And yep. Once again, Mario Reed Foundation Facebook page. Thank you, brother.
Yep, thanks so much. Yep. I hate to say it. Isn't that what it seems so archaic now? You go to one school, you play at that school, you have relationships with the guys on the swim team. They're like, hey, we need another swimmer. We only have three.
Yes.
So you already play basketball and football.
And you're already ribbing them that I can.
And I'm already faster than you. And so then you evidently they qualified for state. Now, it probably was more the Stovall's doing than the Hutchinson's doing. But, like, isn't that.
We can't
that,
rule it out.
I hate to say this. Isn't that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess that's.
I guess nothing is.
I mean, the problem is.
Life changes, man.
Like, there's just so much money now. Like, I was thinking about this as Will said, like.
Is there so much money in high school? Like,
I mean,
in college, the money is because there's actually TV contracts pouring money into the college.
I mean, this is the whole build your brand.
Even that, but that's just ego alum, ego.
I mean, you can
stuff,
make.
Right? It's all. Here's the other thing that's happening. It's the same thing. It's the richer getting richer. Is there so much money in Memphis City school sports?
No. I mean.
No. Or Shelby County, so whatever. Anyway. Okay, we do, we got Chris Harrington coming up next. A couple other things that I thought I'd mention while we are here, Jeffrey, while we have a couple other minutes, because I don't know if you're aware of this. We don't have a Pope yet, do we?
We do not, that I've seen.
Okay.
Nothing has come across my timeline.
The Redbirds are going to be the barbecue nachos. Did you see this story?
I did.
I don't know exactly how it's going to work. They're going to rename themselves the Barbecue Nachos. Here it is. In honor of the culinary creation invented at and made famous in AutoZone Park, the Memphis Redbirds will rebrand to the Memphis Barbecue Nachos for the club's Friday, May 15th and Saturday.
Wait, hold on. I got to stop. Are we claiming we invented barbecue nachos?
100%. Hold on. I was going to get to that. And Saturday, May 16th against the Nashville Sounds. The origin of barbecue nachos can be traced to the opening of AutoZone Park in 2000 and have since become a staple in ballparks across the country. In its purest form, with chips, slow-roasted pulled pork, cheese, barbecue sauce, dry rub, and jalapeno, barbecue nachos are now synonymous with Memphis and AutoZone Park. As soon as I saw this, I, like you, focused on the, there's going to be a controversy the origin story.
Oh, yeah.
What's your sense of the origin story? Do you have a sense of the origin story? Because I'll say this. I remember Ernie Miller. Is it Ernie? It's Hog Wild.
Yep.
It wasn't at AutoZone Park, though. My first exposure to barbecue nachos, and then when I was exposed to them, it was as if they were an invention. Like, this is cool. I didn't know. Like, it wasn't like people have been in the Mid-South have been eating these for 30 years. I ate them at the old ballpark.
Yep.
At the fairgrounds before the opening of AutoZone Park. I know they were served there before the opening of AutoZone Park. Is it true that barbecue nachos were invented in connection with Memphis Minor League Baseball? What's your experience?
Maybe,
you grew up here. When did you first eat a barbecue nacho?
I don't remember a world where barbecue nachos weren't around.
I don't think that's true. You do remember where were chicken nuggets? We've discussed this. Have you always had chicken nuggets?
Always.
I've never had chicken strips. I didn't always have chicken strips. You think when you were 12, people ate barbecue nachos?
Yeah.
I think your memory is mistaken.
Well, I mean, when I was 12, that would also have been the opening of AutoZone Park.
No,
so that timeline lines up with what you're saying.
Then. Right. Okay.
Like maybe when I was six, I don't
remember. Maybe you were
like,
six, but then you wouldn't have remembered it anyway.
Correct.
So what you know
is a world of with barbecue nachos.
But it also doesn't run counter to this claim. It does not undermine this claim because your world, your awareness of barbecue nachos would have started to be roughly when they were in fact invented. At least according to this claim.
Correct. But now that you said the Tim McCarver thing, now I'm thinking back to...
And let's say that was 97. Let's just say 97 or 98.
What did they play, 3 years
there? What year were you born?
88.
So yeah, you wouldn't... I think they were... I don't know, people. Maybe we'll take calls on this later. When did you first... We can't take calls on it now. We got to go to Chris.
Yeah.
When did you first eat your barbecue nacho? When were they invented? I know they weren't invented in 2000, as this press release claims.
I do not have the aha moment of like, that's the first time I ever had barbecue nachos. I don't remember. I just don't remember a world where it wasn't an option.
But that's still, that's reflective of your age. The problem is I moved here in 96, and I think it was roughly around then that they were invented.
So my buddy Hunter Adams, who he claims that the commissary invented barbecue nachos.
Well, this is the other problem. Now everyone's going to claim it. I think then once we moved into AutoZone Park, it was the rendezvous, and I believe they perfected barbecue nachos, but I don't think they invented barbecue nachos.
And maybe that's why I said I don't remember a world where barbecue nachos didn't exist. It's like I've always had the commissary.
Well, we're going to have to get to the bottom of this, but we got to take a break and get to Chris Harrington next. If you could discover the first napkin used to sop up the first, you know, mix of barbecue sauce and cheese, and you had that, and you knew it was, what you would want to do is you'd want to take it to the frame corner, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
And you'd want to get it framed to have it for all time.
A historical record.
You display it in your kitchen or your, wherever it is, in your den, and you'd have it for forever. And whatever's important to you, you should do the same thing. You got graduation coming up. We got weddings coming up. We got people wrapping up their athletic careers. You got jerseys being retired. Jerseys being put on for the last time. High school jerseys. You want those things treasured and remembered and preserved and displayed. And the place to do that is the Frame Corner. FrameCornerMemphis.com. 5035 Park Avenue. 50 years of custom framing. That's older than the old barbecue nacho, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Frame Corner, FrameCornerMemphis.com. Chris Harrington coming up next. Jeff Gawkins, your 92.9 FM ESPN.